On the eighth day, when it was time to circumcise him, he was named Jesus, the name the angel had given him before he had been conceived. When the time of their purification according to the law of Moses had been completed, Joseph and Mary took him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. It is written in the law of the Lord, every firstborn male is to be consecrated to the Lord, and to offer a sacrifice in keeping with what was said in the law of the Lord, pair of doves or two young pigeons. Now there was a man in Jerusalem called Simeon, who was righteous and devout. He was waiting for the consolation of Israel, and the Holy Spirit was upon him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not die before he had seen the Lord's Christ. Moved by the Spirit, he went into the temple courts. When the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him what was the custom of the law required, Simeon took him in his arms and praised God, saying, Sovereign Lord, as you have promised, you now dismiss your servant in peace. For my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the sight of all people, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and for glory to your people Israel. The child's father and mother marveled at what was said about him. Then Simeon blessed them and said to Mary, his mother, This child is destined to cause the falling and rising of many in Israel and to be a sign that will be spoken against, so that the thoughts of many hearts will be revealed, and a sword will pierce your own soul too. There was also a prophetess, Anna, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. She was very old. She had lived with her husband 7 years after her marriage and then was a widow until she was 84. She never left the temple, but worshipped night and day, fasting and praying. Coming up to them at that very moment, she gave thanks to God and spoke about the child to all who were looking forward to the redemption of Jerusalem. I'm going to hand over to Angela now, who's going to lead us in the first part of our talk.
Hello, everyone. I'll just spin the computer around a little bit. Well, I know we just had the reading, but I thought we haven't really had enough jokes this Christmas, have we? Because I don't know about you, but we haven't had too many meals when we've had lots of crackers. So I thought I'd start us off with a joke. No need to answer. I'll tell you the answer. What was 2019's most useless Christmas present? Any thoughts there? Well, the answer is a 2020 year planner. Let's hope that's not going to happen again. Let's hope our 2021 year planners are going to be a bit more successful in being able to stick to what we write on them. Okay, next joke. Why didn't Boris Johnson make his Christmas cake until the last minute? Because he didn't know how many tears it should have. Oh, you're supposed to be laughing, Jonathan. Well, this year, the world really has turned upside down, hasn't it? Now it's the old people who are sneaking out of their houses, and it's the kids who are yelling them to stay at home. Well, on a more serious note, everyone is invited to the Christmas story, aren't they? No one is being told to stay behind or stay inside, stay at home and miss out. And we see that right from the birth of Jesus. In the Christmas story, all sorts of different types of people are mentioned in the birth accounts that we read in Luke and Matthew's gospel. There's rich and poor, there's locals and foreigners, there's friends and family, even the enemies of God, Herod, gets a mention. Everyone's invited, and everyone who wants to gets the chance to come and see and to be included. In fact, even in John's gospel, he doesn't give a factual account of the birth of Jesus, but in the first chapter, he does give the invitation to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. So it's to all. The invitation really is to all. We heard that in the reading as well that Jonathan just read for us about what Simeon said. He said it's for the Gentiles and for the people of Israel. It's salvation for everyone. And I think that maybe one of the reasons that so many different people are mentioned in these birth accounts is so that we can each find a character that perhaps we identify with, someone who resonates with us. And that helps us to identify with the story so that we know that we can be a part of it too. So for today, rather than me just talking on, we've probably been listening to lots of people over Christmas, maybe on the TV, not much chance to hear different voices. So for today, we've asked some of our church family here to share their answers to the question, is there a character from the Christmas story that you particularly connect with? And if so, then why is that? And because this is an unusual year, we've added an extra part which says, which asks, this year, is there something extra that you've learned from that character because of the whole pandemic situation? I think that this year, being such an unusual year, it has given us a chance to understand things about the Christmas story that we might not have seen for ourselves. There's something about experiencing things ourselves that can bring a sort of new light and depth to things that we already know and have read about. Like, for instance, we all now know what it feels like to have to follow government edicts, doesn't it? The government tells us where we can travel and can't travel, even if it doesn't fit with our plans. We have to follow the rules, just like Mary and Joseph did. And that's not something that we in our country have had our freedoms curtailed like that before. You know, we can't buy things that we wanted to buy. We're so used to just being able to do what we want when we want and not live a more limited life. And I think something about this pandemic has helped us to identify with that from the Christmas story. So my question to each person is there a character you identify with? And is there anything extra that you've learned perhaps from that character this year because of the whole pandemic situation? And we're going to hear first of all from Dave Price. So let me hand over to Dave.
Oh, does that work?
Yeah, we can hear and see you, Dave. That's great, thanks.
That's good, because otherwise this would be a disaster, wouldn't it? Okay, so my initial reaction when being asked to do this was that I don't feel like I have a particular connection with any of the characters in the Christmas story. Unlike, say, the parable of the lost sons or prodigal son, where I could probably relate to quite a few of those characters at different points in my life. And unlike Liz, who spoke last Sunday, I've never had any ambition to play Mary in the Christmas nativity, or even Joseph for that matter. But not relating didn't seem very helpful in the context of Angela's request. So I thought I'd better think about it a little bit more. Otherwise, it wouldn't take my 2 or 3 minutes that I've been given. So it turns out that I do relate to one of the characters, although not to a character that actually makes much of an appearance. So the central characters, no, but maybe more to an anonymous character. So if we take a look at the supporting cast, some of those in the background who are anonymous. So in school nativities, traditionally there's an innkeeper who gets one line. I'm sort of reasonably happy with one line. He gets to say there's no room or something along the lines of no. And if anyone's seen the nativity that goes wrong, you'll know that the innkeeper in that scene gets to say, yes, he has a room, which rather spoils the whole thing. But there we go. But I think I would have actually been quite traumatized by the idea of having even one line in the school nativity. But that's another issue. So I've settled on the character who really doesn't make an appearance, and that is whoever it is that offers the room. So traditionally, I think it's possibly thought that the innkeeper has this stable, but more likely it's someone, possibly a family member or friend, or maybe not a friend, we don't know, who offers a room at the basement of their house, which is normally used to house animals. So I can relate to that person. Basically someone offering a safe place as part of their home. So that's the person that I relate to. So what about the pandemic? Have we learned anything about the pandemic sort of situation? Anything different? I think there are some obvious differences. For instance, we're not being encouraged to travel between tiers, even on a donkey. Although Mary might have benefited from the prospect of giving birth, she may possibly have got a medical exemption. But if she did, Joseph wouldn't have been allowed to travel with her. But it's possible that I'm overthinking it a little bit much. So Mary, Joseph, Jesus, they were in danger and they needed a safe place to stay. Back in the summer, we were asked by Hope at Home, that's a whole different story, if we would be willing to host a mother and a small child, something that Hope at Home hadn't done before, and they thought it might last for up to 6 months or so. So we could have thought of lots of reasons why we shouldn't do it, because just like in the Christmas story, there are lots of other characters knocking around, some of whom we might not want to engage with, but quite a lot of whom we eventually have to in this hosting situation. So we recognise it's what we're called to do. And yeah, for that reason, we also felt that we probably would be the first people at Hope at Home who ended up hosting a mother and child. And it turned out that this particular child, unlike Jesus in the story, did plenty of crying. And finally, just to round off, what I would say is just like in the Christmas story, it's the anonymous hosts who receive the greater life-changing gift, and the story doesn't end there. So to be continued.
Thank you very much for that, Dave. There's no doubt that a bit of personal experience does bring the story to life, doesn't it? Thank you for sharing that. That's insightful. I think we're going to hear from Ella now, because children are invited as well. Everybody's invited into this. So over to you, Ella, and then we'll have another carol as we reflect ourselves on how things speak to us. Thanks, Ella.
Okay, so for my person who I feel like I relate to in the Christmas story, I think it's like they're not really like earthly beings, they're more of like the angels, because I feel like I can relate in the way that like the angels were always like ever hopeful and optimistic. They were like always praising the Lord and just like really celebrating him. And I feel like especially during the pandemic, like it's kind of hard to keep like being cheerful and being happy, but like I think like every day you can find new ways to do that and help encourage other people like the angels did, and like spread the news of like the Lord and all around society and stuff. Yeah.
Thank you, Ella. That's great. That's really true, isn't it? That we want to have time to carry on being cheerful, praising the Lord, keeping our spirits up. And we're going to have a chance to do that now in the middle of our sharing time. Let's join together in another carol so that we can keep our spirits up and keep praising the Lord, just as Ella said. Thank you very much for that leading, Ella. That's perfect.
See amid the winter snow.
So it's inspired you to think which characters you identify with. Well, I'm going to toss in my two pen up here. And I think now I might say that I perhaps identify with the wise men. Does that make me wise or a man? I don't know. Well, in the past, I definitely wouldn't have said that. In the past, previously, I think I would have thought of the wise men as just dull men. They're interesting mission, but as people, they weren't particularly interesting to me. I sort of saw them as scientists, fact-based, just following the science, as we say nowadays. Not too much room for discussion or musing. They knew where they were going and they went, and that was all there was to it. But actually, as years have gone by and I've changed the way that I think about a lot of these things, I can see that it's not actually like that at all. They were actually people who were searching for a truth, weren't they? They were seeking something beyond the material world. You know, they had their world with their riches, but there was something they could just perceive out there that they wanted to find out more about. They could sense it, but they couldn't really see it. And they were captivated enough to actually take that risk of packing up their stuff and journeying however far it was, you know, a few hundred miles on camel or however they traveled, without really knowing exactly where they were going. I don't know if you've heard in the news this week, there's been some speculation, hasn't it, about whether certain planetary alignment of, was it Jupiter and Saturn, might have actually been the star that they were following. And that's been happening this week, and we've been able to go out and see it. But it's interesting, isn't it, that the star that we went out to see, we couldn't see it that well because of the clouds. And I wonder if that happened for them as well. You know, they were following that star, and maybe sometimes even in that part of the world, there was clouds and they'd be thinking, will it still be there when the clouds go? Will I be able to see where I'm going? And they just had to keep going forward and hoping that that star would still be there and lead them the way that they'd set out, and they wouldn't be left high and dry, not knowing where to go next. And then as well, they brought gifts that must have been inspired by quite a fleeting intuition about what they were going to find. They didn't know what they were going to find. They went to Herod's palace, didn't they, looking for, you know, an actual prince or son of a king. They didn't know what they were going to find. And yet they brought these gifts with them on some feeling or dream or thought that they'd had. And I think that's how God often speaks to us, doesn't it? We're not really sure. Did we hear that? We don't really know enough of the story to fit it all together. We doubt whether we really heard it right or, you know, did we make it up? We wonder, I wonder if they felt like that when they turned up with their gold and frankincense and myrrh, especially the myrrh guy. He must have really doubted, look, here's a baby, a poor baby in a stable. In those days, infant mortality was pretty high. Probably thought myrrh was a pretty inappropriate present to have turned up for. And yet he had the belief to still present it and believe that his intuition had some meaning behind it. And it wasn't until 33 years later that, you know, the full meaning of that gift was revealed. But he had had the confidence or the, you know, the courage to stick with it at that time. So for us this year, we don't really know even what our next day is going to bring at the moment. They had to change their travel plans and they had to take a different route. That's something that we're all experiencing, not being able to go where we want, when we want, and just being told at short notice. So I think that's something perhaps that the wise men have spoken to me this year too. They had to live with doubt and not knowing it all. They held on to what they glimpsed and look what they found. They found a king there for their gold. They found God born in the flesh for their frankincense. And they found the saviour who died as a sacrifice for the whole world for their myrrh. And that's because they had the courage to stick to what they sensed and believed. And that's something that, you know, I sometimes feel there's things out there beyond what we see. It's so hard these days to escape from just the material world and all the facts and science that we're bombarded with, to know that there's something just beyond that we can grasp and be a part of and that we're invited into. And I think that's a character that I've come to identify with more in this story. It's worth groping forward and taking the risks, isn't it? So that's the end of my identification. What about you, Jonathan? Is there a character that you identify with? Let me spin the computer around and get you in the shot.
Yeah. Hopefully you didn't get that seasickness from that. I guess I'm a bit like Dave in a way. There's not anybody I particularly identify with. On the other hand, I can identify with elements of quite a few of the characters in the Christmas story. But there are two characters that I find that I'm increasingly identify with, I guess, particularly as I get older. And those were the two that we actually had in our reading, Simeon and thinking about one's own mortality. And I guess we've all perhaps had to think about that a little bit more this year as well. But I do think it's quite impressive thinking about these two characters in the fact that they had that that faith and they had that belief that the promises of God were going to come through in what God promised to Simeon particularly, and that they were both effectively living in the temple court in that kind of sort of almost closeted, cloistered kind of lifestyle, completely dedicated to God, but trusting in him during all of that time. I also think it's quite interesting to consider, I don't know whether I should identify with this or not, but it seems to me that quite often we read in the Bible stories that the big events in people's lives, they happen at a particular point and then obviously they go on in their faith. And for some people that happens quite early in life. If you think about it, this really big event perhaps for Mary's life, they happened really when she was very young, probably just a teenager. Although of course she obviously lived through Jesus's ministry and death as well. But for other people, we've got these two characters, Simeon and Anna, where they have this sense of anticipation that God is going to not exactly do something in their life, but actually they will meet, as it turns out, they meet Jesus in the flesh, the real Jesus, right at the very end of their lives. So they they hold on to that hope, and for them that comes through right at the end of their life. We might think about John the Baptist, who also perhaps earlier in life also meets Jesus, actually whilst he's still a babe in the womb, and of course he goes through a ministry which finishes really before Jesus' ministry starts, and that was the end of it. So I guess I've been thinking about those characters and the things they did and the hope that they held on to, the promises there were. In respect to this particular year and what that means for us, I think we've all been perhaps forced to live a smaller or a closer lifestyle. And both Simeon and Anna were able to fully worship God and to serve him. I don't know whether Simeon was serving in the temple court, certainly we read that Anna was worshipping constantly. In fact, what Ella said about the angels was fits in very well. They're lovely. Someone completely given over to worship. And I think this year we've been forced, our horizons have kind of closed in a lot, but that doesn't mean that we can't still have that full relationship with God, even though we've been constrained in other ways in the way that we relate to other people, but we can still relate completely to God. So I think that's what I've perhaps learned from looking at those particular characters and also from what we've learned from this year.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you. That's quite the variety, isn't it, that we've heard, even in those four ideas, even including someone who's a spiritual being as well as physical beings, men and women, old and young, wise and simple, all sorts of different people. And perhaps we can all take a chance today to think who we might identify with ourselves and what that character is saying to us at this time of year and in this world situation that we're in at the moment. I think I've identified as well this year with family who are left behind. I think of Mary's mother. Her little girl was off on her own and she couldn't be there to help her at such an important time. She had to be a part and trust her daughter to God. She must have heard about it all later on when they finally, after their trip to Egypt, got back to Nazareth. But at the time, you know, she was left wondering what was going on. And I've been separated from my boys this year. It seems so recently that they were here under my care and big part of our lives. And now I can't even visit them in person. And we all know that even though we have Zoom and phone, which is great, thank God for Zoom and phone, it's not actually the same as being there in person, is it? As being able to you know, touch the person and hold them and sort of be in the presence of their spirit. But that is worth remembering, that the Spirit of God is always with us. We don't have to Zoom and phone with him, even though, as Jonathan says, we are limited in our lives. We can still be fully present with God with us as much as he ever has been. The truth is, though, separations, physical separations between people have been going on for thousands of years, haven't they? As they were with Mary's mother. And it's happening in lots of places in our world today. Due to the pandemic, yes, that's what we're experiencing here, but also war, poverty, illness, poor governments in different parts of the world. And we are experiencing that separation here too. But as we're all invited into the story, we're all included. Let's hand over to Jonathan now, and he's going to gather some of those thoughts up for us in our prayers today. So thank you very much for those who shared, and listen out for what those characters in the story are saying to you this year. Thank you, and over to Jonathan.